Hello everyone, welcome to episode 60 of Classic Elite, the best in retro and modern gaming. My name is Tony, I'm here with my two co-hosts, Scott and the Gooch. How you guys doing tonight?
Good, man.
Great.
Awesome. Well, we are here to talk about, well, video games, and that's about it. So I'm pretty pumped. Are you guys excited?
Yeah, dude, it seems like it's going to be a pretty modern-heavy episode, which I'm really excited about. There's a lot of cool stuff happening in the gaming world right now.
There really is.
Charging forward.
Yes.
Well, for July, anyways, there's a lot going on.
Yes, and I'm ready for the fall. There's lots of cool games coming out this fall. So
for sure.
Seems kind of slow right now, but that's okay. So, anyways, we got some fan mail to start episode 60. I can't believe we're on 60 already.
60, I know. We didn't even do anything special. Other than Gooch, you count, but...
Aw, thank you.
But yeah, Tony and I, we busted our butts for 50, and man, I don't know if we'll go through that again.
No, that was a hellish week. So.
that was like a month in the making. That was crazy.
I was sweating so nervous while Scott was editing all the stuff.
Hoping no storms come through, no failures, no hard drive corruption.
Oh, dude, it was, yeah, pins and needles for sure. So, yeah, 60, man, that's a lot. I'm proud of us.
We could quit now and still be legends to the 30 people that listen.
That's right.
It would be, yeah, forever. So.
Archive.org, save us forever.
That's right. So,
yeah, we're going to have Gooch start off with a Nintendo Legends comment, right?
Yeah, some fan mail this week.
Sweet. So I can just roll on through reading comments. I feel like a brother. Like I'm included. Like I'm, I don't know.
You are, man. That's what the hazing over the last week was for.
Mm-hmm. The spanking.
I was going to say, that was a really big paddle.
Like, yeah, well.
unnecessarily large.
Tony's a big dude. He can wield the power.
The Board of Education.
Oh, man. The whip was a nice touch.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, sorry, I'm getting off on a tangent. So Nintendo Legend writes in, you got a comment here on your site. It says, I was going to leave a remarkably articulate, clever, insightful, and valuable comment. ... But I can't get over the idea of bacon-flavored cigarette. Once that was mentioned, my brain was thoroughly occupied. In terms of meat taste, that brings a whole new meaning to the world of smoked. I wonder what Peter thinks of it. In their own opinion, it's bad enough that we eat animals, now we smoke them too. And lastly, I suppose this just proves that they can put bacon into anything. I eagerly await a bottle of bacon beer someday soon.
I think that might not be that bad. I know that sounds gross, but...
Well, it's easy. You take a warm natural light and you dump bacon grease into it.
Dude, you dog on Natty so much. That stuff is good. I'm a fat alcoholic. A bacon beer sounds delicious.
Could you just deep fry the beer?
Ooh, deep fry the bacon in the beer.
Ah, see?
Well, we used to talk about video games.
Bacon-flavored cigarettes. Okay, Kevin, eventually I know you're going to hear this right in. Like, what the heck was that about? You've got us Americans completely infatuated with bacon-flavored cigarettes. Seriously, right in. So, okay, Tony, you got the next comment, right?
Sure. We have a new, I don't know if it's a new listener. It might be Jerry Terrifying making up a name. I'm not sure. But it's Tecmo Balls and with a Z. And Tecmo Balls, he or she says, I've always liked the NCAA games much more than Madden. It does a great job of capturing the college intensity. Also, I could not believe it when Tony used Cops as the old cartoon that would be made into a game, because that's what first popped into my head when the question was asked. Not many people remember that show. Also, I've been playing Fallout 3 for about 2 weeks now, and just about how much am I missing playing the regular version as compared to the Game of the Year edition? I am very impressed with the game thus far. I love the podcast, guys. Keep it up. P.S. They already have bacon-flavored vodka, so I'm sure the beer is out there somewhere.
Man, nice.
The end. The end. Bacon sneaks again.
Again.
Into the comment. But thanks for writing in, Tecmo Balls, whoever you are out there looking at the same moon that I am right now.
Stop, I'm going to cry. That's the saddest movie I've ever seen.
I know, I'm just saying. But But anyways, thanks for writing in. And yeah, Cops, awesome. NCAA, I agree with you 100%. I've always liked it more than Madden, just because I like college football better than pro. But absolutely. Enjoy Fallout 3. 2 weeks means you're about 2% into the game. So enjoy playing it. Gooch is on his fourth copy. So
yeah. I'm 2 hours into it on my fourth copy.
So. Nice.
Yeah. One day I'll get an achievement.
Hey, there you go. All right, and lastly, we have the longest email for the worst reader, poorest reader of the three of us. So here we go. It is from our good buddy Carl Shrivers, the owner of Scenic 7PR. He says, "Hey, guys, been a while since I wrote in. Life keeps getting in the way, and, well, you guys rock anyhow, so you don't need me constantly telling you that. I couldn't let the opportunity that was given with the cartoon talk in episode 59. Then he writes in parentheses, congrats on finding Gooch. We'll direct more of the search party to finding DB now. He goes, blow her some cartoons that I think would make some great games and what style of game they would possibly be. Number one, Gem and the Holograms. The music is contagious. She's so outrageous. Sorry, have you guys watched Gem and the Holograms? Do you know what that is?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. I was hoping that you'd get that. That's funny. It's recently been on this channel called Hub, and my girlfriend had never seen Gem before. But when I was growing up, I remember the daughter of the girl that babysat us, she had Barbies and all that, and the Gem doll was like a full inch taller than the other Barbies. She looked like a Godzilla. So, anyways, I'm digressing. But regarding Gem and the Holograms, she says, throw some cell shading into the dynamic music playing style game, maybe Space Channel 5 crossed with Rock Band or something with those two modes, or a combination would work. Not a bad idea. The Raccoons. Hardly anyone knows of this one. I actually remember it, Travers. He says, take the Sly Cooper engine and gameplay and go wild with it. Number three, Silverhawks. Tally-ho! If they're giving Voltron some love, finally, then they have to pick this one up, too. The lead girl favors Mariska Hargitay, I don't know, from Law & Order. Haggerty from Law & Order. Special Victims unit a lot. Cool. Get the Warhawk engine and get loose. What's the Warhawk engine? Do you guys know?
No.
He put a YouTube link. Sorry, Carl, I didn't click on it. GoBots! I was close to picking this one last week. The Poor Man's Transformers. When Starscream was $17 in 80s money, Leader 1 was $3.99, and that's a fact. Fun show, interesting since Takara, owners of Transformers, bought the GoBots line and mixed them as minis, not microns, just as minis, as in Duplo is to Legos. Give them Vigilante 8, or just about any car combat game engine, and see how Cyclone stands up. Number five, Count Dracula and Danger Mouse. British imports, they didn't fare well. CD has a thirst for ketchup, while Danger Mouse is a spoof of James Bond. Pick a 3D action platformer and let either licenses loose in it. So cool. He put Mask as an honorable mention, which is really good, in Visionaries. He said, great episode, guys, to close the email. You did something I thought would be impossible lately. You made me write an email that was more than one sentence. Take care, Carl. So, fantastic email. Those are really good cartoons that he wrote in about. So, always love it when listeners write in and interact with us and give us comments on stuff that they would have liked to have seen us talk about last episode, because we'll always revisit stuff. So, cool. All right, Tony, what do we have on the docket next?
Well, Gooch and I are going to tackle the modern portion here a little bit, and I'm going to start out by, first of all, just talking a little bit about Comic-Con 2011 in San Diego. It was this past week, and not a lot on the game front from that I came across when looking up some stuff and following Comic-Con. As you know, Comic-Con is the largest comics conference in the well, it's just big. I don't know. I don't want to misquote anything. But tons of cosplay, tons of comic updates, superhero stuff. I mean, just it's comics, it's movies, and then there's some gaming tied into it as well. So there's some big movie announcements. I'm not really going to get into it since we're more of a gaming podcast, but a couple things that stuck out to me, first of all, is that it is on the docket that they will be creating a Mass Effect movie. So Gooch, I thought you might be excited about that. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know what to do with it. Like, so much of Mass Effect is all about the personal story, so what story do they tell? That's what I'm really confused about. And then, will it be male Shepard or female Shepard? But no matter what they do, I'm going to watch it. I'm going to go opening night and be really pumped to see it. If, as long as it stars, what's that guy that was going to be in the Uncharted movie? Marky Mark. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
I want him in every game adaptation.
Well, yeah, there's a good chance that one of two things are going to happen to this movie. One, that it's never going to happen. And, or two, that it's going to be a really good B movie. So we'll see. I just watched Resident Evil this weekend. That's why I say that. So, but anyways, yeah, Mass Effect movie on its way, supposedly. Other big announcement is the fourth downloadable character for the new Mortal Kombat was announced, and it was a big surprise for everyone. Freddy Krueger is going to be the fourth character and fourth and final downloadable character for the new Mortal Kombat game. So
pretty cool.
It is. It is pretty cool. I watched some videos, and it's freaky. Like, dude always freaked me out anyways. But
oh, yeah.
Yeah, like the fatalities, he calls up like this furnace from hell, throws people in there. It's pretty intense. So I really, for some reason, have been itching to play the new Mortal Kombat, and one of my close friends is actually sending it to me to borrow for a while. So
nice.
Have you guys seen that arcade stick that they released for Mortal Kombat?
Yeah, dude, it's awesome.
It's like literally half of an arcade cabinet, it almost looks like.
Kevin from Paranerds had it, or bought it. He was talking about it, yeah.
Freaking cool, man. Like, it's, I don't know, I just always thought like having a giant one of those would be cool, but I don't know. Gooch, do you have an arcade stick?
I had an arcade stick once. I had one for my Sega Saturn, and I bought it to play Virtual Fighter 2, which I have no idea what happened to it. It's gone. It's in some attic somewhere, I bet, collecting dust.
DB's got it.
Yeah.
Probably.
With your three copies of Fallout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If we didn't know Osama bin Laden was dead, I would swear DB was hanging out with him in the hills of Afghanistan playing video games.
Yeah, I talked to him the other day. He's just been so busy. We still haven't finished the Back to the Future series playing through it, because we try to get together and play through it, you know, because it's like so cinema-like, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But, man, it took us like months just to get together to play the fourth episode, so I probably won't get to play the fifth until next year.
I hope he's at least getting a little bit of golf in this season.
Oh, I have no doubt.
Good. Priorities, right?
Well, Scott and I bought what was that? The Horde EX2. We bought those last year.
Oh, yeah.
I like those a lot for 360. And then I also have a Saturn one I just got brand new on eBay for like $6.
Nice.
And then I also, the local game store in town has one for the SNES.
And, I remember that one.
Oh, man. I want it. I have passed on it twice, and it's only $8. I need to just get it. So, but yeah. But that Mortal Kombat one, I'd like to have that one someday. That's really sweet. Like, it, just because it's so big, you know, it's really, it actually gives you the authentic arcade feel.
Yeah.
Because it gives you like a piece of the cabinet, it looks like. So, but anyways, Freddy Krueger. Hey, if you're into Nightmare on Elm Street, you're going to like this character from Mortal Kombat. Also announced this week is that Double Dragon 2, Wonder of the Dragons, will be coming to Xbox Live Arcade. A lot of questions about this one yet. I don't know if you guys are fans of Double Dragon. I'm a big fan. Played it a lot when I was younger. This one's coming with new graphics and a 4-player co-op, which I don't
Sweet.
Know how that's possible. But 4-player co-op for the Double Dragon brothers. But new combos and a survival mode as well. But that's going to be one that we have to pick up and do a video of a playthrough on for sure. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a big fan of Double Dragon. And then also this week, Amazon suspended the sale of the 3DS. Did you guys see this?
No, why?
Oh.
They said that they had so many returned for a issue with the flip screen. Like it was coming undone or something or loose. And they were having tons of them returned. But then Nintendo didn't provide a comment to anyone on it. And then Amazon lifted the suspension. So I don't really know what happened, but... For like 4 or 5 days, they weren't selling the 3DS.
I hadn't heard anything about that.
That system's just been plagued with issues since it came out. Big time.
Yeah. Well, every first generation portable from Nintendo seems to follow this path. So, except for the original Game Boy. My original first gray brick still works. No problems.
See, I would say most of them just offer upgrades. But, like, I had the first DS, and it... works fine.
No, didn't it have like the hinge problem too?
Well, I mean, if you give it to a 4-year-old, it did. But wow. No, I'm just kidding. But I don't know. Like I've never had issues with the hinges on it. But well, that one that you had was really old, and it still worked fine.
Yeah, and then I sent it away. I only had it for a few months. I didn't give it enough of an opportunity to break.
Yeah, you should have broke it. But anyways, yeah.
So, no, it did work. It did work fine. I had no issues with that, and I had an original one. So
in the original Game Boy Advance it worked. It was really durable, but it just didn't have a backlight. That was the biggest issue with that one.
Gotcha.
Remember, like the flat Game Boy Advance.
I know. Yeah, I know what you're talking about, but I never had one.
Yeah, they sucked because like no backlight on those. I mean, it makes it almost, you know, you had to like play literally right in the light to be able to see it. So
yeah.
That was dumb.
I have to use my I'll lay down on my back like with my original Game Boy, and I downloaded a flashlight app on my phone. So I'll rest my phone against my chin, and that acts as like a perfect Game Boy light. So I can play my original Game Boy at night. It's sweet. Pisses my girlfriend off because she's trying to go to sleep, but I think it's great.
Well, no one wants to see you in your whitey tidies with a flashlight on your phone playing Game Boy.
Well, I understand that. I don't know what to tell her.
Anyways. Gooch, what do you got for us this week, brother?
Well, there's kind of like a lack of gaming news and not a whole lot being released right now, with the exception of Catherine, which I can't wait to play. But I thought I might talk about some of these games that have come out on Steam recently, these comedic role-playing games. I don't know if you guys have seen them. The Dungeons of Dreadmoor, or probably you guys know about this Cthulhu Saves the World.
I've seen both of those on Steam, and I've been tempted to get them because they're super cheap, right?
Yeah. Let's see. Sorry, quote the right price here. Yeah. So you can get Cthulhu Saves the World for like $3, and that Dungeons of Dreadmoor is only $5, both on Steam. Both will pretty much run on anything. I see no computer within the last 10 years that could not run either one of these games. But it's really cool because they're solid role-playing games. Now, Dungeons of Dreadmoor is a roguelike, being that, you know, very old, very traditional, turn-based, dungeon-crawling, really difficult sort of role-playing game that, you know, a lot of older PC gamers are familiar with. And then Cthulhu Saves the World is definitely inspired by Japanese role-playing games like Final Fantasy and probably more notably the Dragon Quest or Dragon Warrior games. But both just really, really funny. The first one there that I was talking about, Dungeons of Dreadmoor, I don't know if you guys have seen some of the skills. Like, I haven't yet to play the game, but I just want to talk about it because when I was working today, I just kept hearing podcast after podcast talk about it and how great it was. And they were mentioning some of the skills that you would pick for your character. One of them, for example, is called the Fungal Arts. And the description for the skill is, you collect molds, spores, and fungus and plant them on corpses of your enemies to see what useful grows out of it. Icky. So, I mean, it's kind of plain. There's a skill called Archaeology, and this is actually the tooltip on it. It says, no time for love, Dr. Jones. And that's what it says. That's just all it says.
Now, are these indie-developed games?
Yes. Yeah, Dungeons of Dreadmoor was, let's see here if I'm getting the right name here, developed by Gaslamp Games and also published by Gas Lamp Games, excuse me. So yeah, very small team. Same thing for Cthulhu Saves the World. It was developed and published by Zeboid Games, originally on XBLA and recently released on Steam with its sister role-playing game, Breath of Death 7, at the beginning.
The beginning?
The beginning, yeah. Part of the joke. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I love that one. I see that a lot in indie developers when they come out with a game, they add really great humor to the text and stuff, you know? And, you know, whereas, like, the generation we come from, when you're playing a role-playing game, they're real serious, you know, like the originals. And then these new ones that are kind of like remakes of those classics, you know, obviously with different stories and stuff, like, they just add really modern-day lingo to them, you know? And it makes it hilarious, and it really catches your attention.
Yeah, I totally agree. It reminds me of, like, I think Working Designs, when they were doing translations back in the day, like on Lunar on the original Sega CD, they were just so far ahead of the curve because they were throwing in pop culture references and breaking that, you know, third wall. You know, they were doing all this stuff way before anyone was doing it now. I mean, it was all super well written, and they did not do the translation word for word. I mean, they really just made it fit to the American audience and took out puns that made no sense. You know, you are a spoony bard. No more. That was gone. But I just got to mention, this is the best thing about that Dungeons of Dreadmore. There's a skill in the game, this is under the magic specialization, called Necronomicon Omix.
Okay.
Any guess what that is?
Something magic. About dead people.
You got part of it right.
Say it again.
Something with economics.
Yes, it's Necronomiconomics.
Okay. Dead people convention costs?
Sorta.
I don't know, man.
It is the study of economic principles of the dead, taught from the book Bound with Strange Letter, a shady magic indeed. I don't know how that really comes into play in the game, but just the fact that it exists makes me want to purchase this product. That alone warrants $5.
Absolutely. Also in PC gaming, did you guys see the Humble Bundle 3 is available right now, and that's got Jerry Kavanaugh's V in it?
Yeah, CF told me about that earlier today.
I'm buying that after the show, for sure. I got an email from him since CF got me Humble Bundle 1, and since then I've been hooked on those things. Like, what a great way to get a bunch of sweet games.
They make a lot of money, even with people paying a penny for it or a dollar for it. You know, there are people out there who might pay 20 or 50 bucks to help out the developers. By the time it's all done, they make a lot of money, and a lot of it goes to charity, too.
Oh, yeah, that's what it says, that it's to raise money for charity. I remember when Radiohead released In Rainbows, that was a Name Your Price album, and I still gave them 10 bucks. Sometimes when you really appreciate what someone's doing, you're that much more likely to give to them. So, good for them. That's a great way to connect with gamers and raise money for charity, so... Yeah, I did not want this episode to go by without Humble Bundle being mentioned.
Dude, you really sparked my interest in these RPG games, Gooch.
They're really cool. I haven't played Dungeons of Dreadmore. There is a giant bomb quick look, but with a roguelike, it's hard to get a good feel for the game because everyone plays differently and it's a very slow-paced, you know, constantly taking turns with every move. I did play Cthulhu Saves the World, and that game is awesome.
Well, I'm seeing on Steam you can buy Cthulhu Saves the World and Breath of Death 7 for $2.99 and a 2-pack.
Yeah, I should have mentioned that. Yeah, you can save a couple bucks there and buy them together. And they're very, very similar, but I feel Cthulhu Saves the World's a better game. It came out later. But yeah, you might as well just pay the same price and get both games.
Oh, yeah. Well, dude, I'm very interested in those now. I love that style of the old... you know, like the old Final Fantasies and things like that. So I'm definitely interested. And you got to love some good humor as well. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, did you read the principle? I mean, the whole plot behind Cthulhu Saves the World?
No, I haven't.
Just a quick breakdown. Cthulhu, you know, he's a mythological creature, god, whatever have you, and he's evil, and he wants to destroy the world. At the beginning of the game, he is, you know, waking up, and he's going to destroy the world, but he's stopped by a wizard who takes away all his powers and makes it so Cthulhu has to become a true hero in that very generic RPG, you know, cliche. So he has to become a true hero to get his powers back so he can then destroy the world.
Nice.
So he has to save the world, so then you can come back and wipe out all life as we know it.
Awesome. That is amazing. Yes. Well, I can definitely see that that game looks better than the rest of them, so I'm going to pick that one up. So that's awesome. So you got anything else for us this week?
No, that's it. I mean, just all that stuff right there. And then if you don't have a PC, you can also pick up Cthulhu Saves the World and Breath of Death 7 on XBLA for like $1 each. Not as fully featured as the Steam versions, but still, I mean, definitely, if you got to go on Avenue and play it, and you can't play it on PC, then there's another way to get a hold of the games.
Have you bought the games yet?
I have Cthulhu Saves the World on my Xbox.
Okay.
But I didn't really get too far into it. Like, something else came out, and I kind of, you know, took a detour for a while. But I'll probably pick up the Steam version just because it'll be easier to play. It's got more features, and you know, I'm on my computer a lot more.
Okay. Well, that's awesome, man. Thanks for mentioning those. Remember, you can pick both of those up on Steam. Cthulhu Saves the World and Breath of Death 7 for $2.99 and a 2-pack. And then what's the other one called as well? I'm sorry.
Dungeons of Dreadmoor.
That's right. And that one's $4.99, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's been featured on Steam for several days now. So, I mean, you'll probably see it right on the front page.
Well, awesome. I'm going to go pick those up. If you don't have a PC that can play them, go to your thrift store and get a Pentium 3 for free and download them from Steam after you install an Ethernet card.
That's right.
All righty. Well, we are heading into the deal of the week portion, and I'm going to turn to my good friend Scott, always coming up with a great deal of the week. Scott, what do you got for us this week?
Yeah, so this week, J2Games.com brings us 1080 Snowboarding for the Nintendo 64. I hope I have not selected this one yet. I don't think that I have. But if I have selected it already, yeah, it's because it's a great game. Did either of you guys play much 1080 Snowboarding when you were in high school?
I did play this for N64.
It was freaking sweet. After you use the promo code CELITE, CL337, and shipping is included, you're looking at $6.80 for an excellent condition cart. The best I could find on Amazon, I'm not kidding, there was one, it was $8. It looked like somebody ran the top of the cart through their butt crack multiple times. It was disgusting.
Which is how I clean my games.
Yeah. It's like all brown and corroded looking. There was no way that this game would play without issues. It needed some real nice TLC there. So what you can do instead is go get 20% off your total purchase at J2Games.com with our promo code. Make sure to throw 1080 Snowboarding in there. And I know that I say this all the time, but 1080 Snowboarding is such a good local multiplayer game. It is so addicting. There's speed runs, and some of the newer gamers really have to understand that to see some sort of texture in the snow when you're actually slaloming or whatever was absolutely mind-blowing. And this was before Tony Hawk and before, you know, Crazy Taxi or Jet Set Radio or whatever, all these games that allowed you to do cool tricks and manipulate the environment. This game did it really early on, one of the first ones easily. And they have mini games in there, which are a lot of fun as well, that allow you to do like big jumps and trick jumps and all this cool stuff. So for about $6 in excellent condition, if you're an N64 guy, you've got to have this. Our friend VK is a very big Nintendo 64 fan, so if he does not already have this game, I hope that he goes and he gets it, because it's fantastic. So yeah, 1080 Snowboarding for the 64 is $6 roughly at J2Games.com if you use our promo code CL337. But yeah, J2 Games, thanks a lot for sponsoring the show, and excellent game. So yeah, that pretty much wraps up the deal of the week. And Tony, did we do it again? Did we get another phenomenal interview?
We did. The developer of 1080 Snowboarding.
Yeah. I no, said I'm just phenomenal kidding. Interview.
Yes, we did actually. And Scott, the Gooch, and myself are all excited about one game this week. And that game is the Xbox Live Arcade title Bastion, the action RPG with a great art style. And we were just really lucky enough to have a developer, one of the lead developers from that game, on our show this week from Supergiant Games, which is the development company who came up with Bastion. And we want to welcome to our show Greg Kasabian from Supergiant Games. So here's the interview. All right, and welcome everyone back to episode 60 of the Classically Gaming and Electronic Podcast. And we want to welcome our very special guest. He is the creative director at Supergiant Games. We want to welcome Greg Kasabian to the show. How are you doing today, Greg?
Doing well. Thanks. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, yeah. No problem at all. And then me and Josh are here interviewing Greg. And we're just going to start off with a little bit of questioning. Just tell us a little bit about yourself, your history with gaming, and how you came to work in the industry.
Yeah, sure. It's I'll try to keep this short because I guess I've been doing this depending on how you count for a while. I started writing about games kind of fresh out of high school, and that eventually led to me getting an internship at GameSpot, which had just started in 1996. And I ended up working there for a little over 10 years. Where I was editor in chief by the end of my stint, but as I toward the end there, I was kind of reminding myself that I've wanted to make games my entire life, like practically since I was a little kid, and I started for as much as I loved working in the gaming press side of things, I started worrying that like if I don't kind of make the jump soon, I might, you know, look up and another 10 years will have passed by and I might miss my chance altogether. So I got an opportunity to go work at Electronic Arts in Los Angeles on the Command & Conquer franchise, and that's where I met the co-founders of Supergiant Games, Amir and Gavin. I worked with them on Command & Conquer 3 and Red Alert 3. Now, you know, we've gone from working on kind of a 100-plus person-sized team to a team of seven people based out of the living room of a house, and Bastion was our first game as this kind of small startup studio. You know, we just we were inspired by some of the stuff we were seeing among other independent game developers and wanted to do things our own way and try and find our own way in that kind of territory.
Well, it's amazing that you worked on so many great titles. Command and Conquer, those were some of my favorite games of all time. So I played those a lot throughout my childhood and growing up. So that's really amazing. And then to go to independent, I mean, and for Bastion to be your first title, all three of us who co-host this show have all purchased the game. We all love the game, and we're putting out a review later this week. So
cool.
For that to be your first title, we're really excited about what you guys hold in store for the future.
Cool. Thanks a lot. Yeah, we definitely, you know, we held nothing back for this game. It was like our, especially being a small studio, it's like we really treated it as our one shot to try and make a difference. Because yeah, like when you're small like this, you know, if your first game doesn't make a splash, then you know, chances are you're not going to be able to carry on and keep going. So yeah, it was pretty important to us as a project, and yeah, the response so far has been really, really great. So that's been, yeah, the game is only kind of a week old since it came out. But we're still kind of blown away by the response we're getting from folks. It's really cool to see.
So, I mean, like you said, the game has been a really big success. I mean, as far as like critics, reviews and stuff, it's overwhelmingly positive. And you kind of touched on some of this with, you know, your backstory and everything. But, you know, for your first game, an RPG seems like a really big task. Like, why was the RPG the thing you guys went for initially?
Yeah, that's a good, especially given our background of making real-time strategy games. It was definitely a departure for us. But the simple answer is it's just the style of game that we really love. It's the kind of game we wanted to do. I guess like beyond that, you know, we did see that among all the really outstanding stuff happening among these kind of smaller downloadable games, you know, on XBLA and PlayStation Network and on PC and everything, that we weren't seeing a ton of RPGs, or like action RPGs. So that's a, yeah, it's a style of game we really enjoy, and we thought that it was relatively underexplored as a genre, and wanted to see if we could do something, you know, special there, as opposed to, you know, something like a dual stick shooter, right? It's like there's been plenty of stuff of that nature. So we thought about what we could do differently, and of course, what was also really important is where everyone's strengths were. You know, Amir, in our studio director, like he's like grown up, well, a lot of us have grown up playing like Dungeons and Dragons, and you know, just spending lots and lots of time with RPGs, both of the pen and paper and like computer and video game variety. So it just seemed like the sort of thing that we could pull off if we really stuck to it.
Well, you talked a little bit about creativity there, and thank you for not making another dual stick shooter, by the way. If I have
Yeah,
to,
right.
if I review another one of those, I'm yeah, gonna get sick to my stomach. But
No, there's some really good ones, right? It's like, yeah, part of it for us is like if we didn't feel like we could make something that was at least different or better than the other stuff that was out there, then what's the point? So we had to find our own path there, and the RPG seemed like the right thing.
Well, I wanna ask you about the art style. I believe I read somewhere it's kind of a combination of a hand-painted design and some digital animation, obviously. So what was the inspiration for that art style? To me, that was one of the most captivating parts of the game that just kept me hooked the entire time I played.
Yeah, thanks. That's really it's the work of our artist Gen Z. She does all the hand painted 2D stuff in the game, and she joined the project at a time when the look of it was still very much undefined. Like the her technical constraints were that it was a 2D game and it was from an isometric perspective. But other than that, the only other stuff she had to go on was like kind of the tonal and fictional ideas that we had. And she was able to take that information and create this look that really I think it was, you know, very much what we were hoping for. Like we didn't know what the game was going to look like before that, but then we saw it and we're like, oh wow, that's it. Because we always wanted it to be this kind of high contrast type of world where on the one hand it's this almost like a storybook type of setting with vivid colors and everything. We wanted it to be an atmospheric and immersive game, but on the other hand, it's not just a bed of roses. It's like a world that's gone through, you know, something terrible has happened here. So there's a mix of emotions when you see it, and I think Jen really expressed that. There's a lot of depth to the artwork in addition to it just looking really great, I think. So yeah, she really deserves the credit there. And as for we do use some the entire game is 2D, but technically some of the creatures and characters are 3D modeled. They're still turned into 2D sprites, but we did some 3D modeling because we wouldn't have been able to produce like thousands and thousands of frames of animation by hand, which like when you look at some of the units, yeah, it was sort of prohibitive. But Jen still did all the 2D texture work on the 3D models and stuff, so we try to get everything to look very very cohesive there.
So, the narration, we have to talk about the narration, and all of us, you know, here at Classic, we love it. And I just got to know whose idea was it, and how challenging was it to really pull off?
Yeah, that's so the first thing is it started small, and it was just something that Amir decided to try one day because he was already working with Darren Korb, our audio director, and Darren was rooming with a mutual friend of theirs named Logan Cunningham, who's an actor in New York. They've known this guy since they were, you know, playing soccer in middle school or something like that. And they had Logan record a few lines, and Amir plugs him into the game. And, you know, this is before the game really had any real graphics or anything, and it already did something pretty dramatic. So what it turned out to be was a solution to this problem that we were kind of struggling with at the very beginning of the project, which was we wanted to have a game with some kind of, like, emotional weight to it. That could tell a story and everything, but we didn't want to stop the player for the sake of the story like a lot of games do, where they're stopping for cutscenes or making you read like a wall of expository text about, you know, how old the world is or what's happening. It's like we wanted people to play at their own pace and the story would keep up with them. And the narration allowed us to do that. Obviously, we took it a lot further than you know where it started with that first kind of prototype, but yeah, we found the voice of the narrator very quickly after that first test. It's not how Logan normally sounds at all, yeah, I mean overall it certainly was it was a big focus of the project, certainly for me as the guy doing the writing, but it was so like rewarding to work on that in spite of whatever challenges there, it was just a really cool part of the experience of making this game, because as we would add infuse the narration into these levels, they would really start to come alive, and we just never ran out of ideas for what we wanted to do with it. We always knew where we were going with it because we knew what our high level story was going to be. But it took it takes a lot of finessing to get it to sound natural, because it's so key to creating the atmosphere of the game that, like, if the timing of it is just a little bit off, it starts to sound weird, and like it just took a lot of messing with it manually to get it sounding just right. Not to mention lots of re-recording and rewriting and all kinds of stuff. But yeah, we wanted to really hammer it home to make it as good as we could.
Well, that was definitely one of my favorite parts of the game, just the narration. It was so creative, and I just hadn't seen that done before. Kind of a combo question to end out the interview here. Obviously, you and the team at Supergiant have been in gaming for a long time. So what are some games that helped develop or influence the creation of Bastion? And then what's next on the plate for Supergiant Games? What are you guys going to be working on next?
Yeah, I can answer the second part more quickly. We're moving straight on into the – so in addition to just supporting the 360 version and the launch, we are – moving on to the PC version of the game, which is still to come. Since we're a small team, we are developing versions of the game serially, just one after the next, so that we can make the kind of the best game possible every single time, because there are some pretty big trade-offs that come with trying to develop on multiple platforms at the same time. So the PC version is slated for some time later this year. We haven't announced a date for it yet, since we're still sorting a few things out, and then beyond that, it's really you know, we have nothing that we can announce right now. We're still sorting out our future, and frankly, a lot will depend on how Bastion is ultimately received and things of that nature. But what I would tell you is that, like, I think Bastion is very expressive of the type of experience that we want to be able to provide, both, you know, in terms of the moment-to-moment feel, where we wanted this kind of very active game with really tight and responsive controls, but also a deep game from both from a narrative perspective and a gameplay perspective. I would hope that anything we ever work on again would possess those types of qualities, as well as, you know, packing in like lots of surprises for people. I mean, I think one of the things we're really happy about with this game is that we were able to, I think, surprise a lot of people. They just didn't really know exactly what to expect from it. And that's a cool feeling to have when you play a game, and isn't very common these days, since a lot of games are sequels to stuff. You kind of know what you're going to get. The other thing you asked was
what games had influenced the development?
Yes. Yeah, that's is kind of surprisingly a tough one for me, because the thing that all of us have in common is like we've been playing games since we were kids. So our list of influences kind of goes on and on, and it really depends on which part of the game you're even referring to. And really our whole development process is such that we never had like any particular go-to games that we were trying to reference or anything like that. We just had the central idea for the game, this action RPG where you're trying to rebuild the world around you, and we kept layering on small additions to that until it felt like it was done. But we would look at what it felt like the game was missing, as opposed to what other games had that we wanted, if that makes sense. A lot of people see in Bastion that they'll say it's like kind of they'll say it's kind of like a throwback to the 16-bit era. I mean, one of the really nice compliments we get sometimes is that people are reminded of how they felt when they were playing like some of their favorite Super Nintendo games and stuff like that. We did want to evoke the feeling of some of those games, and like personally, I really love games like Chrono Trigger and Super Metroid and Final Fantasy IV and VI that I think marked like the glory days of the Super Nintendo. But I
Definitely.
don't know that there's a lot of specific stuff in Bastion that resembles those games. It's just kind of the overall feeling that we were going for.
Well, Josh, do you have any closing questions or comments?
No, not at all. Again, I gotta say, I love this game, and just like you said, it
Thank you.
reminds me of so many games I played when I was younger, and I get like this magical feeling of discovery every time I play it.
That's really thank you very much for that, because that's really what we hope to achieve with it, because a lot of games, I think, well, once in a while you get a game that's like it's meant to feel nostalgic, right? It's like, oh, it's a remake of this classic game, but it's not the same. It reminds you of the game, but it doesn't make you feel how you felt when you played it the first time. And I think that's a really important difference. And yeah, it's like for me personally, I miss how I felt playing some of those games, and even when I play them today, it's not the same, because I know what to expect. So we did focus a lot on that sense of surprise and discovery, and wanted to see if we could capture some of that. So the fact that comes through at all successfully is really gratifying. That's all we could have hoped for, really.
All right, well, we want to thank Greg again for coming on the show to be on episode 60. If you haven't bought Bastion yet, you need to just go and buy it, because it's that amazing, and it's creative, and it's something fresh in the indie game market. And Greg, we just want to encourage you and the team at Supergiant, keep doing what you're doing, and we'll keep buying the game. So,
Thank you, guys. That's awesome.
yeah, for sure. And thanks again to Greg for coming on the show. And make sure you check out our video review, which will be out later this week, of Bastion. Thanks again.
Thanks.
All right, and welcome back. Thank you so much, Greg, for being on the show. What a fantastic interview. Such a privilege to have the developer from Supergiant Games on our show, guys. We've all played Bastion. We all downloaded it last week when it came out. What are your favorite parts of it so far? Gooch, what's your favorite part of the game?
Everything. This thing, it's so great. It reminds me, more so than any game I've played in the last 5 years, what it was like to play games when I was a kid. I mean, so many memories start flooding in from the first 5 minutes of playing this game. The perspective, the mechanics, the fighting system. It's just classic RPG goodness, and I cannot get enough.
See, that makes me feel good, because for me, the fact that I beat an RPG, I completed it, and I did it over the weekend, I could not stop playing, made me think to myself, man, people that love RPGs are probably going to hate this game, because I need it to be a simple game for me to follow. And I loved it. I loved the control scheme. I loved how uncomplicated the attacks are, but how well the buttons are used. I am actually in the game plus right now. I've actually started replaying the game over again, because the leveling during the gameplay actually is a little slower for what I wanted. as far as getting like experience or having somewhere where you could go and grind. But for me, I love the art style. I love the narration. The narration's amazing with the way that the narrator talks about what you just did. And that's incredible to me that if I break something or I make a turn one way or the other, and it was a choice that I made, the narrator comments on it. Did you guys pick up on that?
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know how they did that. That, to me, was mind-blowing. And then I also loved let's be honest, it's a pretty linear game. You know where you're supposed to go. You have to explore a little bit, but for the most part, you know what the next level is. And that, to me, is just – that's right up my alley. And it's good hacking and slashing, and I loved it, man. I loved all about it. So, Gooch, I'm glad you as an MMO player, a Final Fantasy fan, that you liked it too. I was nervous that it might not get the best reviews because I loved it so much. Isn't that a bad barometer? It's like, I love this game. I bet people hate it.
That's kind of how I do my relationship with my girlfriend. And I love this. I cannot show this to her.
Because I did. I loved the game. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. What about you, Tony? What are your thoughts?
For me, the narrator was just really creative. And then the art style as well was just really awesome. It just gave you an amazing feeling of progression. I felt like, for me, I'm like the little kid that watched too much Sesame Street, you know, so I need a new something every 11 seconds or something, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I felt like the art style changed throughout the game. And then also you would level up or get a really cool weapon, you know, and it just kind of keeps hooking you. And then there's, you know, a twist in the story. And then that narrator's there the whole time. And I was just really, you know, just really into the game and really impressed with the way that it progressed throughout. And, yeah, I fantastic indie game. Fantastic.
I really like the fact that there's only a few places, there's only a few locations of arsenals that allow you to actually switch your weapons, but they make it incredibly easy to get to an arsenal to actually switch your weapon combinations. And I had a lot of fun doing that. I had a lot of fun going with the machete or the hammer or the flamethrower. And it's awesome that the flamethrower is such a powerful weapon, because it stinks in games and flamethrowers aren't just real badass. So, I don't know, for me, I really enjoyed taking the different weapons available and then figuring out for myself what combination is going to work for me. They didn't make a lot of puzzle elements to the weapons. What they did was they rewarded you for mastering it, and they would give you a buttload of currency to go upgrade stuff if you completed certain tasks. But for me, it was nice that, for example, I really liked the machete combined with the flamethrower. I felt like that, to me, worked really, really well. But any of the machine gun type games and the hammer were just awesome. I don't know. Like, there was a lot of choices that you could make to get through the game, and they usually would work together. Like, I'm just having a hard time articulating how cool it is that you can choose your own weapons just because you like them and you'll get through the game with it. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, that was a really cool part of the game. Just being able to feel like you could still accomplish it just because you like the weapons. I definitely know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so. It's just because that I wanted to play the game that way, and it let me. That was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So since this is a 1,200 point, $15 game, my personal recommendation is it is worth $15. I really liked it. I tried to get my girlfriend to start playing it just so I could watch her play it. That's strictly just to watch her, because I enjoyed it. I mean, I'm playing it through a second time.
Yeah, fantastic game all the way around. And Greg, you and your team just did a phenomenal job with it. So I'm looking forward to your future work as well. So, and hope to have you back on the show.
Heck yeah.
We're going to jump right into a review portion. We haven't done this too much lately, but a lot of times we like to do an audio review on the show. And we're going to have our new co-host here, Gooch, review the Hapag Colossus PCIX capture card for HD video capture. So go for it, Gooch.
Big piece of crap. Just kidding. I love this thing.
Well, we just lost our sponsorship.
No, I'm going to do a video review, and I'm pretty much going to make love to it in the audio and video review. This thing is beautiful. I don't really know where to begin. So the packaging is nice and simple, but when I open it up, like when I take out this little brown box and I pop it open, it is just chock full of stuff. The card itself is, you know, a pretty standard capture card. It's got HDMI input, which is really, really nice. It's got component in and out. It's got optical audio. It's got everything. It fits into a PCI slot, so any computer, any, you know, modern desktop, you can plug it right in and go right at it. But in the box, so you have the component cables. You have two sets that plug into the card for in and out. It comes with a remote, like a really nice remote, so that way you can hook this IR device into your cable or satellite box. And, you know, you can use the remote with that.
Nice.
I can't use that, though, sadly. I don't have, like, cable or satellite. I am one of those crazy people who is strictly watching videos on Hulu and Netflix.
Same here, man. We don't either.
So I'm going to take it to my parents' house and give it a shot because my dad swears by cable and sports and all that. But as far as recording off my Xbox, this thing is amazing. It does such a great job. So I plugged the HDMI in initially, and it records in 1080i, stunning quality, really, really beautiful. The bummer is, like, the only downside I can say, and it's not a downside to the car, but just a fact of how these things work, there is a 1 to 3 second delay in the motions that you make on your controller and what actually happens on the screen on your PC if you're just feeding through the HDMI. So what you have to do is use the component cables, the in and out. So what you're doing is you're playing on your television. It's feeding through your 360 into the card and out to your TV. So your TV has no delay, but your PC, while it's recording and encoding and decrypting and all that, you know, fancy sci-fi stuff, there is that slight delay. But once you're done, I mean, I play the game, I hit record, one button push, software is super easy to use, and I hit stop. I mean, it's that simple. I hit start record, start playing, come back to my computer, click the stop button, and I can view the video immediately. And within that same software, I can edit it, add effects, add lettering, just like Windows Movie Maker, but even better. I mean, it's really, really quality editing software and capturing software, and I know I'm talking 100 miles a minute. I've never used a Hapag device ever in all my years of being a PC enthusiast, and I am sold. I am Hapag for life.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, that delay is just, that's common with any recording device that you have. That's why they include the throughput capability. That way you don't have to splice any cables or anything. When you do the throughput with the component cables, then you can play it real time, but like you were saying, the slight delay doesn't matter when you're recording something off a TV, because these things can be used and are intended to also be used as DVRs. And when you're recording something off of a TV, it doesn't matter that there's a delay. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, the cool thing was, like, if I wanted to record Netflix, let's say I wanted to play some 30 Rock and record that through the HDMI, it'd be perfect.
Yeah.
And with the throughput, I can play games on it, and it records really, really high-quality video. I mean, earlier tonight, I was actually late for the recording because I got caught up in, you know, recording gameplay footage. And, I mean, it just looks so nice. I feel like such a pro. Like, this is,
yeah,
this is for the everyman. But yet, when I'm done, and I have all these super crisp gameplay videos that I did myself with minimal effort, I feel like, I mean, I could work for IGN or a big company because it looks that nice. And with the software that came with it, I mean, the editing, you can put transitions and effects and lettering all right there, seamless. You don't have to open another program. It's so cool.
Yeah, no, we love Hapag. It's what they've done for our YouTube channel is unbelievable. The reviews that we're able to put out because of Hapag and AverMedia are amazing. Like you said, anybody can do it, and it looks crystal clear.
Yeah, and really, if you have a really nice desktop PC, we do recommend the Colossus device because it is their highest end capture card.
Yeah,
I think it runs around 150 retail.
It's a good price.
Yeah, it really is. It's their highest end capture card that plugs right into your desktop and it just integrates into your home system. And so thanks so much, Hapag, first of all, for sending that over. We will put it to good use, and Gooch will have his full video review up soon. And then also Gooch is going to be doing a lot of reviews for us here at Classic Elite with the device. So we're excited about that as well.
Oh, yeah, very pumped. So...
And Scott, it's time.
It's time. Are we doing some retro talk?
We are.
All right, cool. Well, I was doing some Craigslisting, okay? And I guess it's not official because I haven't met the guy yet, but on Friday, I am going to go buy a lot of Super Nintendo games. I don't have a Super Nintendo, but Tony, you got me the Retron 3. So I've got a crap load of NES and Genesis games, and so now I need to find a way to play some Super Nintendo. And I got a great deal, a pretty damn good one, so I won't go into that. But I do want to list off the games, and I want each of you to tell me which game I need to try first that I really need to dive into, okay?
All right.
All right. I got Bomberman 2, Star Fox, Mega Man X, Wings 2, Donkey Kong Country 2, Mortal Kombat 2, Tecmo Super Bowl 3, Ken Griffey Jr. Baseball, Street Fighter, and Super Mario World. So which of those titles jumped out at you as I need to go and I need to play through and try to beat that game?
Go ahead, Gooch.
Oh, wow. Well,
there's some good titles in that lot.
Really, really good titles. I have two that I'm really thinking about, but I got to know first off, have you played Super Mario World?
Yes, I downloaded it on Virtual Console and beat it all the way through because I never had. So,
have you played Mega Man X?
That is the one that I pick out of the lot that I'm going to play the most.
Such a great game. It is probably my favorite Mega Man game. I mean, I beat it with a keyboard on my PC.
Oh, wow.
I did not have a Super Nintendo. And now I am really envious because you have a Super Nintendo to play the game that I never could.
And I bought on Amazon today, I bought a Super Nintendo controller. So that should be here, today's Tuesday, probably early next week. So I will hopefully have some good stuff to play with that Retron. Tony, what about you? Any of those jump out that I need to try?
First of all, I have to say you two are freaking embarrassing for not having a Super Nintendo. I mean,
I was a Genesis kid. We've been over this. I don't know. Yeah. We're on episode 60. 60 Jeez. Times we've been over this.
You're in charge of freaking retro, and you don't have a...
I'm trying, Tony. I at no point considered myself an expert.
Oh, man.
You knew this from the beginning.
All right. Do you even play video games?
Barely. No, I can only talk about them. It takes too much damn time. I can't play them.
That's right. Oh, that reminds me of the Seinfeld quote. And you're not a doctor, but you play one in real life. No, sorry. But anyways, everything in life relates to Seinfeld. I know those titles you two talked about are like the obvious choices. For me, I always had Street Fighter II, Super Street Fighter II, in my collection. It was like one of those games I always went back to throughout high school on the Super Nintendo.
Oh yeah.
And it's just freaking hard and amazing at the same time. But I'm not gonna suggest that. I'm actually gonna say, for one, if you just have like a free couple hours, one that's fun to stick in is Star Fox, I think.
I'm really intrigued by that.
And it's got the FX chip in it.
It does.
Whatever that means.
Well, Donkey Kong did too, I think.
Yes. So, Donkey Kong Country 2 is a really good game, really good platformer. But Star Fox, the original Star Fox, I haven't liked many of the other versions since then. But the original one on the Super Nintendo for me was always just kind of one of those fun games. The characters are likable. It's a great, kind of... semi 3D shooter. I don't know how you want to say
it's like that polygon effect.
Yeah, and so it's just it's a fun one if you have a couple hours to stick in and go through a buzz a couple levels off. And so cool. I would suggest that one. So.
Nice, nice. Oh, another game that I started playing last night because my new PC runs it really well. Again, going back to Humble Bundle, the first Humble Bundle came with Braid. I'm not going to get into a review or anything like that, but have you guys tried Braid?
Game. I have. That is a good game.
It's amazing. I love that game. So if anybody out there sees Braid for a few bucks, you have to go get it. And I'm super pumped because as soon as we are done recording this, I will be downloading Humble Bundle 3 so that I can get V. I've heard Critical Failure talk about V a million times, and I've just been itching to play it. So I'm really excited that I'm going to get it here tonight for a really good price. So, but that's all I wanted to talk about. I just wanted to, since I've got some games coming my way that I haven't really played before, I needed some insight from you guys on how to prioritize what games I'm going to go through first. And now I'm scared because I always, as a kid, loved playing like my friend's Super Nintendo or whatever, and now I think I'm gonna be, addicted to it. That Retron, man, it's gonna be the end of me. I love it. It's so good. The Super Nintendo and the Genesis have S video out. Do you know how good that makes that look on an LCD TV? It's unbelievable. Oh
yeah, yeah, it looks better than the PS3.
Okay. Well, not okay. Let's not get crazy.
The FX chip. I mean, that alone, that is.
It's gonna blow up the Retron.
Might not be able to handle it. So, all right. Well, we are getting a little loopy. So, I think that's gonna close out the episode. We've got plenty of time into it. So, excellent. Good job, Gooch. Thank you very much again for being on the show. You're always welcome. As I said last week, you're a lot of fun to have on as a co-host. And you bring a lot to the show. We appreciate it, and anytime you're willing to help, we'll always need it. And for anybody that doesn't know, please check out the new Facebook page that Tony has so eloquently put together. You can actually like us, and it's easy to find. Facebook.com/ClassicLeet. Please subscribe to our YouTube, because you're going to be seeing reviews from myself, from Gooch, from Tony, all at ClassicLeet.com. And our YouTube username, ClassicLeet. And then for all the podcasts and news updates about us, check out ClassicLeet.com. Thanks a lot to Gamersgate. They were enormously helpful in getting us some amazing games for Sega Week. We'll have some Sega reviews out, which will be really cool. And J2 Games for sponsoring our deal of the week. Hapog and Aver Media. Scenic 7 PR. And I think that covers about everybody, doesn't it, Tony?
I think so.
Fantastic. So, thanks again, Gooch. Tony, I will talk to you tomorrow. And everybody, we will see you next week for episode 61. And we already have another awesome interview for that one. So, stay tuned, and we'll get you guys next week.